just want to again remind you that one of the reasons, or a few of the reasons, I guess, that we're doing did this interview with the Eels. First of all, I'm a huge Eels fan, but there's just a lot going on at the moment. This film, Parallel Worlds, Parallel Lives, has recently aired on Nova on PBS. It was made by the BBC about E's kind of exploration of his pioneering work done by his dad in quantum physics. At one point in the film, an MIT scientist equates E's dad with Einstein and Newton, and he's also, his memoir was published in this country recently, Things the Grandchildren Should Know, and it's, you know, chronicling his dark, difficult childhood and adulthood. Dad died very young. His sister battled drugs, alcoholism, and depression, and committed suicide, unfortunately. And not too long after that, his mom died of cancer. So, but the book is a surprisingly upbeat and breezy. Pete Townsend wrote, this is one of the best books ever written by a contemporary artist. I learned more about my own business and my own methods by reading this book than I did by reading the life of Chuck Berry, Elvis, or David Bowie. Also, Yes Man, the new film starring Jim Carrey and Zoe Deschanel, features Eel songs and some other involvement by E, including that Zoe and E wrote the liner notes for the soundtrack, coming out in a few weeks. So with that in mind, let's hear the interview now with the singer-songwriter of the Eels, E.
All right, so let's welcome E to the Sonic Detour. Thanks very much for joining us here on WMNF, E.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so on Friday, you did, I guess, another concert with Pete Townsend as part of Rachel Fuller's In the Attic series, and I heard Rachel introduce you as her and Townsend's newly adopted son. But otherwise, how did that show go, and what did you play?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited that they're adopting me, and I'm glad it was filmed and recorded because that's legal proof.
Sure, that's better than in writing.
Yeah, so I want to get the papers drawn up, make sure my piece of the inheritance is in line.
Secure. Yeah, exactly. But seriously, though, I guess you've done a few of these shows now. So, I mean, how did Friday night go, and what did you play? And
it was really fun. Those shows are always really fun because, obviously, because you're playing with Pete Townsend. So
right.
That's all it takes, really.
Yeah. In fact, at this point, I mean, you've done a few of these. Have you sort of settled into it, or are you still kind of experienced like a pinch me moment, like, my God, I'm playing with Pete Townsend?
I it's weird. I think I've finally gotten to the point where I think of him more as my friend than the rock icon I grew up idolizing.
Wow, that's cool. Then that also makes things more comfortable with the new parental role that he'll be having.
Yeah. It'll be pretty low key around the house.
Cool. So, but knowing, in reading the book, knowing that Townsend has been, obviously a pretty vocal fan of yours in recent years, I guess I was sort of struck in reading the book how much, listening to The Who was obviously a sort of a pivotal part of your youth, Quadrophenia, et cetera. So I guess this kind of brings me to an area I was hoping to explore with you, like the power of rock and roll, not only to entertain, but to sort of to heal and to comfort and, because your book sort of provides an insight into another factor of that equation. I mean, listening to music helps us all when we're, or all us music fans at least, when we're depressed or lonely or trying to cope with a breakup or a loss. But that's true whether, it's you listening to The Who or Neil Young or me listening to The Eels. But I thought what was really, kind of cool was to what extent in the book were you sort of trying to reflect that music functions that way for the other side of the equation, like someone who's creating it, like yourself?
Well, music serves me on every level you can imagine. It's just the perfect thing for me, and I just feel so lucky that I get to do it. I don't know what I would do without it.
And it does seem like, as your childhood and even your adulthood were sort of unfolding, and obviously there was, some fairly dark moments and tough moments, but it just seemed like that was your sort of refuge and your solace. And that's true for a lot of people, in those years. But then that seemed to kind of propel you into, like, making music, creating it.
Yeah, I look at my sister's situation, and I think that we were just two sides of the same coin, and she just wasn't lucky enough to have what I have with music, and I think something like that can really save people.
Yeah.
As melodramatic as that sounds.
No, because that's it's really clear from the book that that's, among other things, that was a real salvation for you, and some of the other things in the book really sort of suggest that you know, kind of, you know, the latter day E is almost the creative equivalent of a shark, like that writing and making music nearly every day is kind of almost central to your survival. Is that about right, or is that kind of overstate the case? Or
well, for me, just being creative in some outlet.
Yeah,
it doesn't necessarily have to be musical, but that's been the best one for me.
Sure, sure. And I just want to let our listeners know, if you just joined us, we're speaking with Eels singer-songwriter E in a conversation recorded Monday. I'm Duncan Strauss, and this is the Sonic Detour on WMNF. So what's, I guess I'd be curious if, whether it's, you know, if it's music, obviously, but sometimes it could be just other creative things. What's a typical day like for you in terms of writing, recording, or doing something creative? Like after we finish chatting right now, will you write some music? Will you head to the basement? Will you do some other kind of writing? What? Just kind of maybe walk us through if there is such a thing as a typical day, what it might look like.
Well, the great thing about my life is there isn't really such a thing as a typical day. It goes through phases. And,
mm-hmm.
It's the kind of life I always dreamed about when I was working at crappy jobs when I was a teenager and, you know, just feeling like I was not cut out for it and always imagined the kind of life I now have, which is so fantastic. And so, you know, for a few months, there are days where you get up in the morning and you go downstairs and you write songs, and then there's a few months where you go down there and you record songs, and then there's a few months where you're out playing concerts, and then lately things have gotten really weird, and there's a few months where you're working on a documentary about your father, or, you know,
yeah, well, I
a couple years where you're writing a book about your life.
Right. Well, it seems like there's been a lot of that, and you know, I certainly want to touch more on the film and stuff, but you know, in fact, those things really, I guess, you know, have involved a lot of kind of introspection, looking backward. But I'm going to guess that back to sort of always wanting to do something creative to kind of keep moving or moving forward, that, you know, you're probably looking ahead to some projects. Can we talk, for example, for a moment about your involvement with Yes Man, this Jim Carrey film?
Sure.
Because I've sort of heard bits and pieces and not sure, you know, what's true and what's rumor. So are there Eel songs, both new and old, or even beyond that? Did you write the score, or what sort of is your involvement?
There's a bunch of old Eel songs, and there's a new one, and I co-scored it also.
Okay, who did you...
Lyle Workman.
Oh, wow, cool. And was that your sort of first... sort of step into scoring on that?
I've done it before, and I swore I would never do it again, but somehow I got talked into this.
Yeah, and what made the difference this time? What lured you back in?
Just the sheer tenacity of... because I'm the original no man. That's,
right.
That's what appealed to me about the film, was I was intrigued by the idea of what would it be like to say yes to everything.
I see.
And I kept saying no to them, and they were so into the philosophy of the movie, they just kept going until I finally had to say yes.
Wow. Okay. So you got caught up in the Yes Man thing.
Yeah, I did.
And can you give us any sense of what so there's just really one new Eels song?
Yeah. The other thing about it is it's filmed in my neighborhood, and all the characters and places of my neighborhood are reflected in it, and it felt like sort of a natural fit.
Cool. So that was part of what got you to say yes.
Yeah.
Also. Excellent. And so otherwise, when might we expect a new album? Because I'm going to guess that there's an album or two's worth of stuff, you know, sitting in the basement or on your computer or somewhere.
Yeah, there always is. I don't know, you know. I'm just doing what I love to do the most, which is make the music. And,
yeah.
And I get less excited about the idea of releasing it and everything that goes with that. So I don't know what's going to happen next yet.
Okay, so no even loose timetable for that?
Not yet.
Okay, but can I request you know, when there's actually a next album, and especially a next tour, that it includes a Florida leg? Because, you know, I just moved here about a few years ago, and I used to live actually right near the Galaxy, so I, you know, could hit those shows and El Rey and all those things. But the last couple of legs, I think, since I've been here, I think you've gone as far as Atlanta and stopped.
Yeah, I don't know why we rarely go to Florida. I feel like the last time I was there was when I was opening for Fiona Apple a long time ago, maybe.
Well, it's funny, you know, you mentioned that because our program director told me that years ago, way before my time here at the station, he thought about 15 years ago, there was a show that the station actually put together that involved you performing on a bill with Tori Amos.
Oh, right, yeah.
And so, anyways, yeah, so we hope you'll come back towards Florida and Tampa.
Well, we just go where the work is, and if Florida wanted us bad enough, we'd have to go. You know?
Okay, so this sounds like it may require a
petition. Blame Florida, not me.
Okay, excellent. All right, well, we did at least become a blue state, so we're doing some better things lately, I think.
Well, that's promising, yeah.
Yeah. So, speaking of live stuff, one of the hallmarks of the Eels and concerts is that the lineup and the musical approach often changes, not only from tour to tour, but sometimes from leg to leg. Is that just sort of artistic restlessness or just a real powerful desire to keep things fresh and interesting sort of for all parties?
Well, I think both. You know, it's never concocted like as something to just for the sake of being different.
Right.
It's always something that reflects some real artistic need, but it also is good for keeping things fresh.
Yeah. Well, because that's the thing. I mean, I can remember a few years ago, I think a good friend of mine and I, who went to all kinds of Eels shows, and another friend was visiting from out of town, and I think it was the sort of tail end of the last leg of Souljacker. And so we said, yeah, come on, we already have tickets, we'll get you a ticket, we'll go. And I think that leg, even though we had seen at least one earlier leg, which was quite different, this was sort of, I think, when you guys were doing sort of a little more, I don't know, for lack of a better term, punkish, version of the songs. And at one point, my friend and I looked and said, was that I Like Birds? I mean, it was like really, but I mean, I just thought, well, that's just a measure of, I guess, E mixing it up and,
Yeah, over the years, there's always like some outcry from members of the audience that aren't getting what they expected. And it can be difficult to go through it at the time. For me, even as far as that aspect of it goes, but it's worth it, for in my mind, what's important is building up a catalog of experiences that you can be proud of.
And so when you say difficult for you, you mean just because if you're doing a version or several versions of songs that people are not expecting, you mean difficult in that way, or?
Well, I mean, I approach it from a very non-cynical place. Like, you take someone like Gene Simmons of Kiss, and
okay.
I think, like, the way he looks at things is very cynical, because he says, the kids want ice cream, let's give them ice cream.
Okay.
But what I'm thinking is, what would I want as the audience member?
Right.
And I'm just trying to give myself, the audience member, a good experience, and what I was always interested in when I was a younger concert goer was things that were interesting and
yeah.
didn't sound just like the record. And
right.
People that came out and really put an effort in trying to make it a great, unique experience.
And even beyond that, it seems like, too, that again, even from one leg to the next, and again, like any band that, has a really, fervent following as the Eels do, I mean, there's people who are going to see every show they can, at least in their geographic areas. So I guess when the next leg comes back and it's, different people on stage and at least some of the songs have been kind of reinvented, that's probably also that exact philosophy you've just outlined about, hey, Mr. Fan or Miss Fan, here's a whole different kind of experience for you.
Yeah, I just think, like, if I'm going to bother leaving the comfort of my couch, buying tickets, and going through all the parking hassles and everything, I don't want it to sound like the CD that I can just sit on my couch and listen to. I want a unique experience. And even if I go to a concert and the singer comes out and they play four songs and then the singer throws a tantrum and the concert's over, at least I got to see this unique tantrum.
Right.
I got my money's worth.
Right. It's not programmed. It's not same old, same old.
Right.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So we did touch on briefly the film, and am I right in thinking that this Parallel Worlds, Parallel Lives, that the first opportunity to see it, at least in this country, other than, I guess, it was sort of actually operated as a as the opening act, right, on the last Eel show,
yeah.
That did those shows that did not make it to Florida, but I heard about them. So
yeah, we're always looking for unique opening acts.
Yeah, MC Honky, et cetera. But,
right.
But so was the airing on Nova really the first chance to see it in the States then? Or?
Yes.
And will there be other opportunities, either on TV or in theaters? Or
that's being looked into, and the jury's out on what the rights issues are for it to be on DVD, but hopefully it'll eventually, hopefully the full BBC version will be on the DVD eventually, I hope.
Yeah, I see. And with the benefit of some time and distance since, because that, you know, the BBC, that film was actually made a while ago at this point. I mean, what were the sort of the most profound virtues to you and your understanding of your dad now with a little more time that's passed since you were in the midst of making that film and on that exploration?
Well, about halfway through making the film, I started to realize the arc of his life and work was really tragic, in that it made me understand him a lot more as a person, to see that he was just too smart too soon for his own good.
Ahead of his time.
Yeah, I mean, literally. You know.
Yeah. And although, but I mean, you know, when like the guy from MIT essentially, you know, equates him with Einstein or Newton, I mean, you know, that sort of, I mean, just sitting there watching, it sort of, you know, blew my mind. Did it blow yours, or by that time were you already sort of, you know, not capable of being that shocked to have him sort of, you know, placed in that realm?
Well, I mean, at that point, I knew that he was revered in certain sects of the science world.
Yeah.
But it's always, you know, I get a kick out of meeting people that are excited to meet me because I'm my father's son. It's something different than, you know, I'm lucky enough to have two reasons for people to get excited to meet me now.
Sure, exactly. and with the sort of the film project and maybe even more so the book, writing the book in mind, I mean, has it altered, you know, the way you approach songwriting or opened up anything differently, more or less autobiographical, for example, or anything else?
Well, you know, it's gotten a lot of stuff out of my system that has actually made it so I don't feel the need to write any songs about my family right now.
Uh-huh. Right. But did it also affect just the way that you, you know, approach writing otherwise, just because I'm sure the experience of writing the book was, challenging and, you know, invigorating and all kinds of things at various points along the way. Did it just give you any sort of different ways to approach, you know, phrasing or language in songwriting?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I definitely found that writing a book is much harder than writing a song.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with a song, there's all sorts of elements and variables and ways to cushion things and change things. And writing a book is just so exacting. It's just the sentence and the paper. And
yeah,
it has to be just right. It's all so naked, you know, and that's what I found so difficult about writing it.
So it sounds, doesn't sound like there'll be a lot more prose writing, at least in the immediate future.
Well, on one hand, I like the idea, except when I remember how hard it was.
Mm.
You know, and it's you have to be so dedicated to it, and it's you know, it's a lonely way to spend your days, and you know, I learned why all the great writers are alcoholics.
Well, but also, is it all that different, or all that different in terms of isolation from writing songs? I mean, I know obviously if you record them, then there's sometimes going to be other musicians, but.
Right.
Isn't there kind of a parallel between the isolation of sitting there banging out the prose and crafting a song?
There's something less lonely about writing a song, even if it's by yourself, I think.
Interesting. Just one more time, say that we're talking with Eel's singer-songwriter E in a conversation recorded Monday. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is the Sonic Detour on WMNF. You know, all kinds of people have seen the film, and you know, my mother-in-law and others were really struck by it. And so for people who might have otherwise been unfamiliar with the Eels prior to the film, I wonder if I could ask you to select, say, three or four Eel songs that you think would constitute either a good introduction or entree into the band, into your work.
Well, we just put out like a best of the Eels' first 10 years called Meet the Eels, and that's why it's called Meet the Eels.
Right.
Even though we've been around for that long, it's meant to be an introduction to the band. And
so the songs on that album, even though there's more than the three or four I was
thinking are... you could pick the first three or four.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. And how effectively, I guess I'm still interested in some of the use of Eels music in films. I mean, how effectively do you feel that the Eels music has been used in film? Maybe this will be different as of Yes Man, but, you know, in your book, I think you even referred to at one point, you know, that your music's in movies with green men, but do you feel like, you know, there are other kinds of films or other kinds of use of films that Eels music or even scoring now in the wake of Yes Man that you could or should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like Yes Man is, I think, very atypical of what you might expect us to be doing in terms of music in a film. It's, you know, it's a big comedy.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But that's also what appealed to me about the idea that it was so different than the other things I'd been involved in. So I just thought, like, that might be a nice change. But, you know, I think more what we might be suited best for is, you know, more contemplative films, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I remember the first time I heard Eels music incorporated on screen, it was Guest List on an episode of Homicide.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought it was just, like, incredibly well done and well used, and I don't know what your, you know, if you even remember that or what your feelings were, but I just thought...
I thought that worked out pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. So, I guess we're sort of in the last couple minutes here, I couldn't help but at least bring up, so many parts of the book were so, you know, obviously, you know, dark and difficult, and yet some were just full of humor and self-deprecating humor. And I don't know, just for our listeners who haven't had a chance to read the book yet, maybe you could just recount a little bit your first meeting with Neil Young, acknowledging that, you know, you growing up, Neil Young, you and your sister listened a lot to Neil Young, and then he invited you to play on the Bridge School benefit.
Yeah, my sister and I, it was one of our major bonds, was Neil Young. So it was bittersweet for me to finally find myself in his house meeting him, and yet she was dead at that point, so I couldn't share the news with her.
Yeah.
And then I do this thing whenever I meet one of my heroes, and I just completely get really nervous. And in the case of meeting Neil, I was introduced to him, and I shook his hand, and my voice cracked, and I said, "I like your beard."
Yeah, I was almost going to say that at the beginning of our conversation, but I just thought that, no.
But that's funny, because I've been getting a lot of people saying that to me lately.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. But, I mean, but also, it was so, you know, kind of sweet in a way, because it's sort of the, you know, the challenge of meeting your heroes and you know, just being nervous and all those things. And has there been any further contact with Tom Waits, speaking of heroes or collaborating with heroes? Or?
Yeah, we stay in contact, he just did a tour.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw the Jacksonville show, and it was...
You got that, and he didn't even come to Los Angeles.
Well, there you go. That's a bit of a trade-off, but I still...
I think that's... You got the good end of that.
Well, I'm still lobbying hard, though, for an Eels show on the next tour. I just hope you'll keep us in mind. So with that, in fact, I think probably we're at the tail end of our time here. But thank you very, very much for making the time to join us here on the Sonic Detour on WMNF. And again, the book is Things That Grandchildren Should Know, fantastic memoir, and the film, which we may or may not be able to get our hands on DVD or elsewhere, is Parallel Worlds, Parallel Lives, and, of course, the amazing full-service website, eelstheband.com. So, E, thanks again for making the time to join us today.
Thanks really for having me.
All right, take care.
Take care.
All right. Thanks to E and Eels.